Accession number 20311, Reel 1.
Bill Brown, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born at Great Driffield in the East Riding of Yorkshire.
Which year was this?
1920.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Great Driffield?
Yes, I was educated at the Church of England School, Great Driffield.
What did your father do for a living?
My father had been brought up in farming and he started a business of cowkeeper and supplying milk to customers, raw milk. The cows were milked twice a day. The milk didn't even go through a milk cooler, and it was delivered twice a day loose from a can carrying 2.5 gallons of milk on bicycles. And he started that business around about 1918, after he'd been a farm foreman on the Yorkshire Wolds on various lovely Wolt farms, which is the breadbasket of England as regards growing cereals. I think there's more cereals grown on the Yorkshire Wolds than there is in Essex and Suffolk and Norfolk combined. And he was a foreman managing strong men who were living on the farms. It was all but done by horses. No tractors in those days. By the time they were 40, they were too old to handle these men, and so they either went as labourers or managed to start a business on their own, which he would start with one cow and still work on the farm as a labourer, and then he gradually built the farm, built up to quite a few cows and managed to get arable land scattered on the outskirts of the town from different landlords. All the land now is built as the Driffield bypass goes over one field, and all the other fields have got houses built on them. Very hard working man was my father, very placid man, never heard him use a wrong word. And he was, I think, 64 and ought to have been taking it easy when I was conscripted to go to the war.
Did all your ancestors come from the same area?
Yes. My father was brought up on the Birtsall estate, Lord Middleton's, near Moulton. He lost his parents when he was very young. He had to be brought up by his eldest sister, Aunt Sarah Han, who would be about 16 or 17 years old. I think my father was about, he said he told me he never knew his father. His father had died before he could remember him. And they were all agriculture or connected with agriculture. His brothers and his sisters. He only had one sister surviving, that was Aunt Sarah Han. And her husband would be working on the Birtsall estate, which was an area of, maybe about 8 to 10 square miles of Birtsall Hall, Lord Middleton's, and all the farms were owned by him, which was managed by bailiffs or farm foremen. I think that's... Also, on mother's side, they were all ex-landlubbers.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
To do what?
Well, my father had built the business up by then. He employed one man. And he wanted me to work for him. And dispose of the man, because the work was that bad to get. My mother never wanted me to be brought into the scheme of things, cleaning cows out and milking cows and But I suppose I was loyal to father and I was interested in. So I started working for father. Had to handle two shire horses at the age of about 15, ploughing and milking cows and the rest of it. Mm.
What were you doing when war was declared?
Still with father. Distinctly remember listening to Chamberlain's speech, 1939, September. And I remember it as if it was, well, today actually. And having had memories of meeting people who'd served in the First World War, I didn't realise, you know, that it would be quite the same, you know. Because I don't think we were prepared for war. Mm.
Did you feel any sense of dismay at the war declaration?
No, I can't seem to remember. Can't seem to remember anything about people. Saying we just seemed to get on with the work, and being in the East Rhine of Yorkshire, we thought, well, we're pretty safe there if they start bombing or anything, but it didn't prove to be that way, as I found out later on, about a year later.
Why, what happened?
Well, actually, Driffield Aerodrome was bombed before they even had a bomb dropped on London. August 1940. My father and me were working in a 6-acre field among a root crop, which we used to grow for winter feed for the cows, turnips and sweet turnips, which we used after the new year. And it was a lovely sunny August day, and we had this drone coming over the coast from Bridlington, Flamborough area, and all of a sudden, we saw the planes dive and the bombs dropping onto Driffield Aerodrome. Luckily, none hit the town, which was only about a mile and a half away. And then, following that, there was another wave of planes just head-jopping. And there were machine gunning, and it was harvest time. And in those days, the corn was cut with a reaper with four horses. And it startled the horses that much, they were galloping away with a 6-foot Massey Harris reaper behind them. And that was before there was ever a bomb dropped on London. So it proved that, you know, you weren't safe in the East Riding of Yorkshire.
Were there many planes?
Yes, I counted several. But luckily, there was a farmhouse, which was the county council farm, which was adjoining the field, and I was friendly with the farmer and the family, actually. And I knew there was a cellar, and so with all the flak flying about, I made a run to join the Robson family in this cellar, which we did till everything was clear. My father, who was by then 64 years old, he wasn't quite so fleet-footed as I was, and the hedge bottom hadn't been mown out, which was a traditional job at harvest time. He dived under a hedge which was adjoining a grass field, which was full of nettles, and he dived in there to out of cover of view to escape the machine gun bullets.
Who and what were being strafed?
Well, just civilians, actually. There was no troops in the area, only at the local aerodrome, Driffield Aerodrome.
Were there casualties?
No, fortunately there wasn't, apart from, I think there was one or two accidents where the horses had galloped away with the self-binder, because it was surrounded by Well, I could see from this particular field, I could see to Driffield Wold, which was 4 miles away. I could see to Nafferton, which was in the Vale, several miles the other way. I could see over towards the coast. I could see the local railway from Hull to Bridlington. And so I was on this high ground, and I was able to, you know, see all around. And there was casualties at the aerodrome, yes. There was, I think there was 4 hangars destroyed, and I never knew how many casualties there was. I don't think there was a lot of the Air Force staff killed, actually. I think whether they, you know, took cover in shelters, underground shelters, maybe. You know. Everything was a bit secret in those days, anyway.
Did the war affect you in any other way before you joined up?
No, I don't think it did. Actually, I was deferred for 6 months. My father was, you know, he was getting on. He was, I think, 64 when I was 20, because I think I was the last of the family. And he deferred me for 6 months. And after that 6 months was up, I think I was 20 in February, and most of my colleagues, being brought up in a country town, you knew everybody, and, you know, you'd lived together all the years. People weren't quite so mobile in those days. And after the 6 months deferment from March to, end of August, it cropped up again, and my father said, "What are you going to do, boy?" He said, "Do you want to go to the war, or do you want to stop at home and help me?" And I said, "I'll leave it to the authorities." I said, "If they think I'm doing more good joining the forces, or I'm doing helping you, I'll go." I didn't want white feathers thrown at me when the war was over, if I was still surviving. All my colleagues and school pals had gone. So I said, "We'll leave it to them." In September, I got called to go and have a medical at Scarborough, which I passed A1. And then I was interviewed to see which regiment I would like to go into. And I'd passed a driving test on the 3rd of March 1937. My father had worked hard, and he'd managed to save up and buy a Ford Y model, brand new, £145 on the road. And it was the only pleasure he had, was to go and visit his brothers and relatives on the Yorkshire Wold on a Sunday evening. And so I was, I had to pass the test as soon as I was old enough to take them around. And also I used to go and buy cream and butter from, and eggs from the neighbouring farms 2 miles away for resale to customers in the town. The farmers in those days were glad of the cash, because in the Depression there was a lot of farmers, big farmers, going bankrupt. I thought, well, I'll go in the Royal Army Service Corps. I'd been driving for 3.5 years, and like the youth of today, I was keen on driving, and I thought, well, I can drive the supplies up to the fighting troops. Not that I was backing out of anything, and that's what I said I'd to do. But when the actual papers came, about 3 weeks after, I was ploughing a 2-acre plot of land with 2 horses. It was early October. And the fields being about a mile and a half from home, we used to do the routine morning work, and then we used to go and do about 5 hours. We didn't come home for lunch. It wasn't worth trailing the horses backward and forward. So we used to do what they call a one yoke. You just yoke the horses up for once, and when they were tired after about 5 hours, you knocked off in the middle of the afternoon. Father would bring me a cooked meal up in basins, you know, hot meal. And we had half a day's thrashing at the end of this field. The wind was blowing from Flamborough Head, and there's nothing to stop it. Bitter cold wind even in those days, in that month of October. And while I was having this meal, my father would go one or two bouts with the horses, single for a plough. And then he fished in his inside pocket. He said, I thought I'd better let you have your dinner before I give you these. So I opened them out, and it said a report to the guards depot, okay to join the Coldstream Guards. The funny part about it was I had a friend who was ploughing on the adjoining field from the farm where I took cover. And I went down and I said, oh, I've got my papers, Percy. Oh, he said in his real broad Yorkshire voice, where's the going, lad? Well, I said, I'm going into the Coldstream Guards. Oh, he said, they'll be far better off guarding Buckingham Palace than in the front line. I've often thought of Mr. Percy S, because I never saw the palace. I said, I never saw the palace till I came through London once on a leave. Nearly everybody had to do a palace guard, a bank picket, or St. James Palace Guard. But me being a driver, after I'd done my training for nearly a year at the depot and Pirbright, trained as an infantryman, then I had to go through the driving course, although I was already a driver. I was shunted straight off to the 4th Battalion as they were beginning to get a bit of transport together, 1941, and they wanted drivers.
What had your training been like?
Training was very good. I was a bit timid at first going to the depot because I'd had a cousin who'd joined up in about 1938 and I'd seen him come home in his red tunic and bearskin and that. And I knew the discipline was pretty tough, but I'd been used to discipline. I had good discipline at school at Driffield. My headmaster was a real disciplinarian, and you didn't step out of line, otherwise you were soon in trouble. And I'd been used to wearing heavy boots, and being in the milk trade as well, you had to lead a pretty clean life, and so I was used to the discipline. So I was able to put up with it. It was pretty tough at the depot in those days because you were getting people from all walks of life. And I remember one incident where one chap in our squad was letting us down. He had dirt in his fingernails, and after about 3 weeks, the officer inspected the squad as we were drilling on the square with dozens of other squads. They were recruiting at the round of about 150 a week, reporting in the Guards Depot in those days, which formed several squads. And the officer inspected us at the slope, and this chap, he had dirt in his fingernails. So Sergeant Burridge, who was the superintendent sergeant, he got a rollicking from the officer, and at the end of the actual drill parade that morning, he told us later that we all had to parade outside his bunk in our own time in the evening every half hour, which we did do. After about the third instance, he called myself and another two behind. He said, now look, he said, you three chaps look to be the bright sparks of the squad. He said, this chap's going to let you down all the time. So he said, you know what you've got to do with him? I said, no, we don't. I said, well, you've got to, all the squad's got to get together. And he said, when you get him back into the room, he said, you've got to strip him off to his birthday suit and get the fire bucket and the scrubbing brush and soap and give him the treatment. It's known as the regimental scrub. Well, I'd scrubbed horses' feet, because in the winter horses used to get a bit bit lace in the and they would rub all night stamping, you know, and I'd wash cows, but I'd never heard of anybody having to scrub a human being. Anyway, we did it, and it did the trick. This chap, I felt a bit sorry for him. He was only my age. He'd been a miner in the Barnsley area, and miners, although they didn't have, I don't think they had pitted baths so much in those days. But you could see yourself in his nose after that. He was spotless, like, and that was part of the discipline, I think, you know, to, you know, so you didn't let one another down, you know, when it came to the heat of battle. Mm. I was at Caterham from October the 24th till end of February, about 16 weeks, I think. Then it was to Pirbright, where things got a bit easier. You had to look after yourself in those days, and as long as you looked after yourself, you were never in trouble. Like, you know, we were allowed a permanent pass to Brookwood and District. Not that there was much doing at Brookwood. I think we used to get maybe to walking to the pictures occasionally. Although I was a driver, I had a job to get onto an MT course. They seemed as though they didn't want people who'd done a bit of driving before the war. But anyway, I put an application in, and I marched into Captain Kenyon. He was known as Clutch Kenyon to us. You know, everybody had a nickname. And asked why I hadn't been chosen to go on an MT course, but whether I'd been overlooked or not, I don't know. But anyway, I was put on an MT course after I'd finished all the infantry training. And that was for 8 weeks. I didn't do any driving. I used to let all the others drive who'd not done any driving before. They were getting desperate for drivers then. They were getting transport together. But the trouble was, we had 1,500 white trucks. I don't know, a lot of people will remember, and you could drive from Land's End to John O'Groats in top gear without changing gear. There was no synchromesh gearboxes in those days, and unless they doubled the clutch, they crashed the gears and they didn't like making a noise, so you had to sort of encourage them to drive. But after 8 weeks, they passed out, and they would gain experience. We used to say sometimes they weren't they wouldn't be qualified to drive a donkey and cart, but you know, some of them turned out to be good drivers. Although I never came across many after I'd left Pirbright, because I was the only one from my original squad and Pirbright who went to the 4th Battalion, because they were a motorised battalion with the Guards Armoured Division at that time, and they didn't. They had the strength of infantry men. They just wanted the drivers. So about September, after nearly a year's training, I was sent to the 4th Battalion, who was stationed at Boreham Wood Elstree, and we were in the houses that the film stars used to stay when they were making films at the Elstree Studios. And I was only there about a month when we moved down to Somerset. I remember taking advanced supplies. We used to drive, load up the previous evening, and we'd drive from Boreham Wood to Froome in Somerset, unload, and then back in the day in convoy.
What did it seem to be an efficient unit?
Yes, we were motorised with the Guards Armoured Division, the 1st Battalion of the Coldstreams. They'd got some tanks together, Covenant as they were, and we used to go on manoeuvres on Salisbury Plain, and we just drove with our infantry troops behind. Instead of having to do it on foot, they were into the scheme on with transport, you see. And at a certain point, they would get off and act as infantrymen, as if they'd been marching to the point of the battle.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, the first night, the first Saturday night at Marston Biggott Froome, I'll always remember the MT sergeant came to me and he said, "You'll have to drive that 1300 white to Bath." This was known as the Passion Wagon, used to take the troops to Bath and Bristol, you see, for a night out. I said, "I don't know the road, Sergeant." Now, Sergeant Axon couldn't even drive himself. How could he be an MT sergeant when he couldn't drive himself? That's the funny part about the army, isn't it? Anyway, I said, "Oh, the Sergeant Major will navigate for you." It was quite hilly between Froome and Bath, about 20 odd miles. And it was October time, dark in the evening on the return. On the return, I pulled this 1300 white Bedford under a big oak tree. And with the headlights being on, I must have just let it go an inch too far. And on a Sunday morning, there was a slight tear in the canvas above the cab and the canopy above, about an inch either way. And Sergeant Axon spotted this. He said, "You'll be on a charge for that, Brown." I said, "Oh, yes." I said, "Well, you know, I couldn't see this with the lights shining back at me." So I had to march in to Major C.R. Peel. And Major Peel said to me, he said, "How long have you been driving, Brown?" I said, "Well, I thought I passed a driving test with a Ford car in 1937. "Oh, well, in that case, you're an experienced driver." He said, "You'll be fined 2 and 6 pence. I was getting 7 shillings a week, and 2 and 6 pence of my 7 shillings went. I later met Sergeant Axon about 40 years later at one of our memorial services, and I said, "Are you Sergeant Axon?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you know me?" He says, "You're not Guardsman Brown, are you?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Oh," he said, "you're one of the quiet boys, you ought to have stayed in." I said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "For such as you to put me on a charge for a little for a little tear on WD property." We later got rid of Major C.R. Peel. I think he'd been in the Shanghai riots. He was a typical guards officer of peacetime. We came to Purfleet on a rifle course. And Purfleet's on the Thames, not far from Chelmsford here, where we're making this recording. And it was foggy. We came for a week. We had a police escort from Staines all round the North Circular to Raynham. This must have been round about 1942. And you couldn't see the range at 100 yards. So Major Peel said, "Oh, we'll have a drill parade." There wasn't a proper square, it was just hogging. So we had this drill parade. Second morning, the same thing had come along. "We'll have another drill parade." So, but we said that after the second morning, "We've come here on a rifle course, not on a drill course." So there was about several who'd been made up to lance corporals and quite a few guardsmen. We said, "We're not going to do this," the third. So we went and sat in what was the so-called naffy. And maybe people haven't heard about this, but I suppose you could call it a mutiny. Mutiny in the guards is something. But anyway, the superintendent's sergeant in waiting and the sergeant major, and they wouldn't dig us out. No, we stood firm and we said, "Well, no, we're not going to do it." And we had to make a stand against this silly, well, the late Major Peel now, he died about 3 years ago. And we got rid of him. And we got another major who was more of a discipline, but you got discipline with justice. If you played the game with him, he played the game with you. And Major John Edward Buckingham Pope. and he'd been in the regiment from 1930. Providing you weren't frightened of him and you stood up to him, he respected you for it. And I had a great respect for Major Pope, and he looked after me.